Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy bye week.
Happy bye week indeed. The fighting byes are in town. I don't necessarily think they're going to be a challenge, but stranger things have happened, I guess.
I mean, we did beat Clemson, so...
We did beat Clemson.
I guess the Vegas odds are probably around the same.
Yeah, the Vegas odds say... actually, the Vegas odds have only crept up to 11.5. They started at 10. Seems that there's some sneakiness going on in the desert for the fighting byes. The fighting byes did sort of test Clemson last week, actually. They lost 27-24. It was a rough go for the Tigers, but nonetheless, the Tigers pulled it out. Fighting byes fall to 0-8 on the season.
Well, when you have Kelly Bryant playing in a little rare cast, you know, I don't know what they expected, but Dabo just does not want to put Hunter Johnson in there for some reason. He just refuses.
I mean, I feel like there was some mix of hope and faith there for him. That just the hope and faith were telling him that he needed to start Kelly Bryant no matter what.
He's just done it. He's just a senior. You got to play your seniors, or else, you know, something. I don't know what, but seniors.
Seniors indeed. In that case, you would think that hope and faith would also tell Dino Babers to start Zach Mahoney, but not the case for us, thankfully.
No, we have a coach that, you know, he's a man of science.
He's a man of science.
And as long as the science isn't like Eric Dungy might be concussed.
Which, yeah, you know, I mean, I guess I don't want to speak too ill of guts and hope and faith and all that, because when I look at the Eric Dungy we saw at the end of last week's game, I don't know if clearer, you know, minds would necessarily toss that in.
He was more grit than quarterback at that point, but he was still plodding along and somehow had us in position to win the game, despite the fact that he looked like Greg Paulus against USF in the first half.
I'm not even doubting the staff. I just think that there was just a... There was a real just kind of throwing him to the wolves aspect to everything by like halfway through that game. And again, not doubting the staff, but I'm definitely a bit concerned with our abilities to just kind of say, eh, he'll be fine. Like, when you think about Eric Dungy's injury history.
Yeah, it is almost like, it's like weirdly funny in a perverse way how we do play him like he's this like indestructible guy who's never left a game. Like, he's Brett Favre, and instead he's like, up to this point, up in his career, like, his injuries were the main focus aside from like some good moments, which is nice that he's like kind of flipped the script and now we focus on him as like a great quarterback, but still, like, lingering in the back of my head every time he tucks and runs or, you know, takes off, although he has been, as we pointed a lot, like, he's been way smarter with how he takes hits, and aside from a drop kicking or, like, flying knee, squirrel kicking defenders occasionally, God. Like, he has, which I was, like, both very, like, annoyed and also, like, thought about it for a second, like, that was kind of awesome.
No, you see, I felt like that one was awesome because it was a calculated risk. I felt like the second time he did it was not a calculated risk.
No, that was dumb.
Like, you weren't jumping him. It wasn't going to happen. Like, so.
No one's ever going to go low on Eric Dungy again because they know they're going to, like,
either get... You don't have to go low on him. You can just go high on him and still try to jump over
right.
You.
Right. That's why. Because, like, you either go low on him and you're either going to get hurtled or you might get kicked in the face and made a meme of. So it's just not worth it. You're just going to wrap him up high.
Right. Yeah, and, like I said, this isn't to criticize Eric Dungy. I felt like... While he did throw four interceptions in the first half, I'd say two of them weren't his fault. Two of them might not have been his fault. Dino says they weren't his fault. I feel like two of them were probably his fault. Two of them were not. So with that in mind, like, I don't think it was as bad. And when you consider the drops and everything else, like, I counted, like, let's say conservatively seven passes that should have been completions. So then in that case, you're looking at, like, almost a 50% clip on the day, if not higher. And when you look at, like, how well he ran, like, he didn't have a terrible day, even if he didn't punch it in the end zone.
No, he had a great running game, 20 for 100 yards, some huge, huge runs. The team wasn't anywhere going to be close without him, even with the four interceptions and a pretty spotty first half.
Right.
Like, he was, again, like, Strickland had a great game, and Moneal was nice in spots, and you know, we had some good moments from Irv and Ishmael, but even in a bad, probably like statistically the worst performance of his career as a starter, like Dungy was still the reason why this team was in the game late in the fourth quarter.
Statistically, one of our worst performances, like since Babers has arrived, and yet I know, like looking at Bill's numbers, I think it was the worst performance, and yet still tested a top. Like, and that's what's weird. Like, I wish I could have like a 10-minute conversation with Bill on it and just be like, I know you probably don't know the answer here, and that's fine. You shouldn't. But, like, how do you quantify a team that never plays up to expectations and yet almost always tests their opponent?
It is weird. It does seem like it's I just noticed that the College Football subreddit, a total aside, has Dino and Dabo in, like, a weird Flintstones thing.
Oh, yeah. That started, like, a week ago.
I figured. That's hilarious. Anyway, who's the baby? Oh, that's Butch Jones. That's amazing. Okay. I'm sorry to have derailed in the middle of my own thought.
That's fine.
Bill just plugs things in, so the numbers do what they will, and we've kind of, I think you had a really good explainer on why the numbers don't like Syracuse. It's still kind of jarring every week to see how low they are, but, I mean, it really does come down to efficiency because that's such a huge metric, and this offense, while it, even when it succeeds, it does it in kind of like janky ways versus like an offense. Like if you watch Oklahoma State beat up on someone, like they just move the ball.
So
and
not Texas.
Yeah, not Texas. Like
anyone except for Texas.
Yeah, I mean Texas has a really talented defense that is starting to come together. So I get that. But if you saw like the Oklahoma State versus Pitt game, which obviously is a much, you know, that's like one of the ideal games honestly for any offense. But you just saw like consistency and the ball was being moved on almost every play, and there were chunks of yards versus, like, Syracuse, where it almost seems like any big play kind of happens by mistake, even though they happen, like, just often enough where you're like, okay, now this offense actually has something.
Well, you look at the points per game, and you look at the points per, like, points per play, points per drive, like, and that's all efficiency numbers, obviously, but, like, the points per game stuff, like, which is not really efficiency-focused, it's just outputs, like, under Babers, other than the Pitt game, which we still lost, like the first Pitt game, obviously, like this team doesn't look like world beaters at any stage. And like, that's not a knock on Babers, it's the knock on the execution on the field where like this team just can't seem to, it can't seem to repeat something enough to say like, okay, we can rely on that every game.
Yeah, I still think the offensive line, which we've, you know, commended for improving during the year. Not last week, and Miami's really, really good up front. But that was, you know, a really rough performance, and it's hard to get any kind of rhythm or consistency when, you know, Dungy doesn't really know what he's going to face in terms of a rush every game. I'm looking at Bowling Green's 2015 advanced stats, just because I was interested to see what the offensive percentiles looked like for a team that was, like, really rolling in his system.
Yeah.
And when they were playing, against MAC opponents, so basically their peer group, 89, 94, 95, 84, 97, a slight dip for a couple of games, 76, 59, 81, 89, and then 73 against Georgia Southern, which was after Babers had already
left. Still much better.
So, but yeah, but they were consistently in the 80s and 90s right. Versus Syracuse now, which, you know, was 90 and 89 against the two teams that we beat the early wins. But then 19 in Central Michigan, and then it's kind of been consistent, actually, in between the mid to high 30s and the mid to high 40s. And then Miami was dropped all the way to 18, which a lot of that has to do with the first half.
With a 1% chance to win.
With a 1% chance to win. And if you watch that game, Syracuse had a much higher than 1% chance to win with like 4 minutes left. So.
And if that one ball had gotten picked off, then that...
Oh, God. Poor Rodney Williams.
You know what? Rodney's actually played really well lately. I think that's like a...
Yeah, no, I feel bad because like that probably haunts him a bit.
It's like an unsung like narrative of the season. I kind of want to talk to Julian about it because I feel like he'll have more to say on it. Like, Rodney Williams is oddly like, he was kind of demoted at the beginning of the season, but he still saw the field plenty, and then he got to jump in. Like, Rodney's been like... I've always been a big Rodney Williams fan, even when he got like burned in the early parts of his career. Like, he's been like a really good player for us, like even if the execution like hasn't always been there, the want and ability has always been there, and like he's been a long time member of the secondary, even if the numbers haven't always backed up his, you know, execution on the principles of our always kind of shifting secondary.
Rodney Williams has kind of improved along with the secondary as a whole. We've seen this kind of trajectory with the secondary overall this season, and he's right, you know, he's kind of smack dab in the middle of that as a pretty consistent performer, both in the struggles last year and now that the team is pretty decent on that in that regard, where we really didn't expect it to say they had some depth, but last year that, you know, we couldn't cover anyone, and this year it's a much different story, and he's definitely a big part of that.
Yeah, I mean, we have our moments where we can't cover anyone, and those happen like two or three times a game. It just so happened that, like, in the Clemson game, they couldn't connect. I would bet that against Louisville, when those happen, they won't be able to connect. But in the Miami game, they were sort of able to connect. And, you know, that's just kind of going to happen. I would bet that it happens. It works out against Florida State, too. I think for Louisville, it's really going to be whether or not we were able to, you know, defend Lamar Jackson. We really, to our benefit, I guess, we really haven't faced for a full game a healthy mobile quarterback. I don't really think it's going to go well if we do. Hi, Lamar Jackson, once again.
Yeah, it's a concern. I mean, obviously Bryant would have been that, just he's such a good runner, but he was so hobbled that he was forced into the pocket and, you know, he got teed off on there. I will say, like, if we get a really good defensive line performance where we can kind of contain Lamar into the middle of the field as much as possible, maybe we can have some success, because Louisville's offensive line is not very good.
I don't buy it, if only because Miami, like, Rozier's not as mobile as Lamar, and he still pretty much did whatever the hell he wanted.
Yeah. No, it's a, I mean, no one's really stopping Lamar Jackson, so I'm not going to bet on it. But Louisville's also had some really, like, awful performances this year.
Yes. So, terrible ones.
Yeah. So I'm not going to totally write off that game, even though I do think that's probably our toughest game left on the schedule based on what we've seen so far. I mean, Louisville just beat Florida State pretty. They won by three, but I thought they controlled the game.
Yeah, it didn't really look that close.
And yeah, I couldn't remember it was only a three-point game until I just looked it up mid-sentence. But
it's not to hate on our friends in Florida State either. I mean, they know just as well as we do, and everybody else does, that they've struggled.
Yeah, it's just a bad year for them, and then there's been some ridiculous questions about Jimbo. Like, I don't know. I feel like some fan bases are just getting, like, shouldn't be a surprise. It's college football, but like some specific big time fan bases like Florida State and Michigan are getting kind of ridiculous with some pretty. I mean, Florida State struggles are you can explain them. Michigan just, you know, they were always going to be down this year. I don't know why everyone like thought that wouldn't happen. Why? Because they beat Florida. Like, Florida's not any good. So, but FSU, yeah, there have been like. From like ridiculous Florida State fans, not like, you know, normal ones who have brains.
Right.
But there have been questions about Jimbo. It's like, come on, man. They lost a you know, borderline Heisman candidate, or at least preseason Heisman like hype quarterback in what, halfway through the first game of the year?
Like, yeah, and someone who could like help you deal with the offensive line struggles that we knew you would have. So, right. Yeah, so putting a freshman behind that offensive line, and now everyone's just gonna blitz. Like, the same thing would happen, I mean, knock on wood, would happen to us if Dungy went out. And we ended up with, you know, either Mahoney, but to more extent, like Rex. Like, everyone knows exactly what you're getting with an offensive line. Blitz and see what happens. And when you have, you know, quarterback like Francois or Dungy, or name any other really, I mean, Lamar Jackson, like, really good players that play behind really bad offensive lines, they're able to still make things happen. But if you have someone who's inexperienced and not really as good, just from a, again, like just gameplay standpoint, not necessarily a talent level standpoint, these sort of things happen. And, you know, I know somebody mentioned in the comments, and I really hope this doesn't come true, that it would be the most Syracuse thing ever to beat both Clemson and Florida State, a thing we never thought we could in the same season, and then not make a bowl game. Yes, that would be a very Syracuse thing. Please let it not be this year.
That's one of those things that I really hope doesn't happen, but, like, in, like, 4 months, I would probably look back on it and kind of appreciate how it happened.
Yeah, like oh, it's of course. Like, of course you did that.
Remember we beat Florida State to go up to 5-4 and then lost to Wake, Louisville, and BC?
In the Big East, and might as well have been Big East Bowl.
That would be so awful. And that would be so Syracuse.
It would.
Like, that really is the most Syracuse thing that could happen. From here on out, like going 4-8, like you'd be like, okay, that's that, you know, that stunk. beating Florida State, which obviously Florida State isn't, you know, has their own problems, but still winning a game at Florida State and then going on to lose those three games in a row just be so traumatizing. And I really don't want to. I don't look forward to that possibility or the takes that would follow.
No, I'm not about that life at all.
Let's just not. Let's not do that.
That said, what I would like to take out of this is, can we like will into existence like just some belief that Wake Forest was in the Big East and like left with us?
Like some like weird like alternative like fan fiction.
Yeah, you know, like Every Day Should Be Saturday's thing where Auburn is an ACC team.
It's weird though, because like, well, I don't know. I feel like Wake could have been like an early Big East, like an OG Big East team.
Yeah, and then we
threw them out. I don't think it would have fit in with like the USF amalgamation.
Or could they have?
I mean, on the field they could have, but like as a university, like, nah, they wouldn't have been about that. They would have rather been independent.
That's true.
They're very private. Like, we're a private school. Wake Forest is like,
they're super private
school. They are the like a very, very private school.
Yeah, I mean, you and I, I'd say of most Syracuse fans, probably have more knowledge of Wake Forest than most, for some odd reason, and that's why it's almost perfect that we host this podcast. But yeah, I would definitely throw. Let's just say that happened. Let's say Wake Forest was in there from like, okay, how about this? Wake Forest was there from like 92 to 99, and we threw them out. And then when they got good again,
along with Temple, we just tossed them.
Yeah, and well, no, because we invited Temple, we tossed Temple in 2003. So let's say that we tossed Wake in 99, and then we invited them back in 07 after the ACC championship season, and they actually said yes, and then they left with us again. Or should we say no? Actually, let's screw that. Let's not do that. Let's say they were there from 92 to 99. We tossed them, and then they ended up in the AC. See, I really want them to be there for that, like, for those really lean years, but they actually accomplished a lot in the ACC during those lean years, so it's kind of tough to make this happen.
Yeah, they were like they were salvaging straps as like a Mad Max ancillary character on the side of the road. They're like, oh, that guy's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
No one else has any water, and everyone's huffing gasoline, but, you know, Wake Forest over there selling spare tires, having a pretty decent time.
Yeah, they understand economies of scale, and
so I'm imagining now Wake Forest University in a Mad Max universe, which is just, they're like by far the least fitting school for that.
And but, Jim Grobe, no, in hindsight, Jim Grobe, Wake Forest, that's exactly what they were.
Oh, the football program, yes.
Yes, the university, absolutely not.
Our quarterback just got hurt, here's another one.
It's the appearances.
He's the same.
Yeah, It's actually a very good analogy for America. The appearances of it from the outside, sure. Well-oiled private school. Internally, ooh. There are some.
So if you're wondering if this is a bye week, yes.
Yes, this is.
This is a bye week.
Yeah, since we've been in Wake Forest fanfic world for about 3.5 minutes now.
Yes, of what is actually like our 40th minute of recording, even though it's only the 19th minute of this podcast. Figure that one out, everyone.
little cutting room floor action. Anyway, to get to the actual topic at hand, Syracuse at 4-4. I think we're both happy about it. I feel like a lot of fans are not. I feel like Eric Dungy is not. And I could understand why the people aren't, but I could also... I could almost guarantee you that, you know, in on Earth 2, that if Syracuse doesn't lose to Middle Tennessee, they almost definitely lose to Clemson.
It's so hard to like actually quantify that, but I kind of buy the note. I buy the theory, even if it doesn't like hold up to like real scrutiny. Like, I get why that feels like the case.
Well, I think it's a motivational thing. Like, I mean, Babers has like kind of half-assedly addressed it, like, and rightfully so. Like, Middle Tennessee showed you could bleed, and then you kind of got to hit reset on the season after two games, which is not a luxury a lot of teams have.
Yeah, and also, like, I think there is something for, obviously, college football, like, is the sport you want to lose in least, but there might have been something to, like, just getting the weird, like, having not lost yet monkey off your back early so that you could maybe sneak up on people, because if we were not undefeated, but like with one or two losses heading into Clemson, like, I don't know that the Tigers would have approached that game the same way either.
Yeah. See Hurricanes, comma Miami. Team that we were not sneaking up on in any way, shape, or form.
Nope. And now we don't have that luxury ever again, so, or at least not for the foreseeable future, so.
As long as Dino's coach, no, that's not something we're going to be able to do.
No.
But, yeah, you know, this kind of feels early, but why don't we halftime this thing a little bit?
I'm with it. It's not like we have a game to break down. We've already talked about our Wake Forest fan fiction for, you know,
yeah,
the podcast, as was always planned.
Of course. Yeah, why don't we discuss some beer?
Cool. So I went to Single Cut over in Queens on Sunday and tried a bunch of new stuff from them. They had a new IPA called The Punk with the Stutter, which was pretty solid. Not quite as good as their more signature ones. Weird and Dilly, which is one of my favorites. Super, super hazy, which I had. And also, I didn't actually have one of their... what is it that I got a growler of? Soft Spoken Magic Spells, by the way, which is like one of their signature IPAs, which I have a growler of sitting in my fridge.
As New York's growler fill laws, are they just like, just bring it in and we'll fill it?
Most places.
So lucky. California's just so shitty about that.
What is it? Like, you...
No, like on paper it says like any non-clear container in like a defined like 32-ounce or 64-ounce, and you can do whether it's screw top or swing top, but everybody decides that, like, they don't want to always follow that, so like there's a bunch of places that only fill their own stuff. There's a bunch of places that that will fill others if you put tape on it. There's ones that'll only fill blanks. There's ones that'll only fill screw tops and only fill swing tops. And like, you go down to Texas, you can walk into a gas station and get a fill of like a local IPA for like $6.
Yeah, I mean, usually if I have a growler, that means I go to the place like at least once in a while, so I'll just bring their growler, so I haven't encountered an issue. But I don't think it's super hard and fast in New York for that.
There's so many breweries here, and I have three different growlers that I have to use.
So I had those two, and then I also tried their More Cowbell Milk Stout, which was very smooth. You know, if you like milk stouts, definitely... a very solid one, even though that's mostly more of an IPA and a sour brewery. And then I had Rosetta by Omegang later on in the day, which is kind of a fruity, strong lambic. It's super interesting. Actually, a little more alcoholic than most lambics, which I feel like generally trend a little lighter. This one's almost 6%.
That's definitely the high end for lambics. I'm usually seeing that in the 4 to 5 range.
Really, like, full body flavor, too. Drinks more like a beer than a lot of lambics do. So nice effort from Omegang. I also had a key lime pie goza from Westbrook, which was delicious. Really, really tasted like key lime pie and in a good way that worked. But you got, like, all those different flavors and all those notes, but not, like, you know, to be obnoxious.
I'll tell my brother to snag that for me for my my upcoming visit to the Carolinas.
Yeah, I'll be down there tomorrow, so hopefully, I mean, there's so much Westbrook there now everywhere, so hopefully I can find it, because I hadn't seen that before. I don't know if that's new by them. And then I also had an Innocent Gun, which don't find everywhere, but I always enjoy a nice, you know, bourbon-y cask barrel Innocent Gun. So pretty decent beer week, I'd say.
Nice. I started my beering on Friday, as one usually does. Buddy of mine's a big Astros fan. He's from Houston area, so met up with him. Brought our dogs. My wife joined us as well, and we watched the Astros Yankees game that day. And Monkish had a bunch of IPAs on, so I had their Vocabulary Spills, it was double IPA. Beats is Infinite, which is probably one of their better ones on right now, and then a Foggy Window, which has become. Despite them having a real like rotating cast of characters on the IPA tap list, Foggy Windows was one of the OGs for them, and it's become a bit of a not staple, but one of their better works. Had from Brewery Tarot, Pomeroo. It's not exactly an apple cider. It's more of like a sour apple, like a very subdued, I think it was only like 4.5% ale. Then after the Syracuse game on Saturday, had a future started yesterday. Was a sour from Monkish. Went out to Laurel Tavern on Sunday over in Hermosa Beach. Had a Stone Ripper pale ale and had a San Diego pale ale, 394 from Alesmith. And then I was at the World Series last night and had just a Dos Equis because, sure, whatever. Fun game, though.
Yeah, you had a good one. And you know, you're out in 2.5 hours, which was absolutely mind-blowing.
I spent more time in my car to and from the event than I did in the stands watching it.
really, really bizarre. Like, I can't remember the last baseball game at all. Like, I've been to some quick baseball games where you're like, oh, it was like 3:03. That's pretty good. Like, for a World Series game,
yeah.
Obviously the pitching was incredible on both sides, but man, like, what a nice, like, change of pace. And I'm not one who gripes super, like, all that much about the length of baseball games, but it was nice to see Wendell by that quickly and still, you know, be a pretty fulfilling experience.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I would be able to conceptualize that so much better if not for the traffic. Where?
Yeah, well, that's an LA thing, I'm assuming.
Just, oh, I mean, it was so goddamn bad. Well, the thing is, too, like, I think at this point, like, almost every ballpark but this one, like, sees this. Like, for those who haven't been to L.A. or haven't been to Dodger Stadium is nowhere near anything. Like, literally nothing. Like, so it's not like your typical urban stadium where you kind of, like, roll up via public transport. Like, there's public transport to get there, but you're not taking it. And you just kind of end up, you know, just driving quite a bit. I mean, I live, like, 16 miles from Dodger Stadium. It doesn't sound like a lot. Out here, that's an eternity. Like, that is all the miles. I planned on taking a shuttle from South Bay, which is, again, not close, up to Dodger Stadium last night, and I can't believe I'm just ranting about this, but again, bye week, where I was going to take that shuttle, but I rolled up at you know, about 2:55 p.m. for a 5 o'clock start out here, and rolled up to the metro area, and not a single parking spot at 2:55, and on top of that, there was a line, like, wrapped several times around the building to get onto a bus. So I quickly bought a parking pass online because it's $30 in advance, $50 at the door. So quickly bought that, and then the Google Maps said 52 minutes, so I was okay with that. I could deal with that. But when I looked again, when I was about 2.5 miles from the stadium, it told me that it was then still another 44 minutes to the stadium. And I drove well more than 8 minutes to get to that point. So I knew I was in for quite the experience, unfortunately. So finally got there around 4:50. Quite a bit of time in the car. And then, yeah, I had to sit in about 2 hours of traffic after the game as well. So much fun. So much fun.
Yeah, like, taking the 7 back from Mets game can be rough, and it's crowded and, like, uncomfortable.
It's not that, though.
And, you know, the train could get delayed and break down, but it's still, like, you're going to be back to Midtown in probably 45 minutes at the absolute worst. And that's, like, if everything goes wrong. So, yeah, not that.
I've driven to and from Bridgeport, like, with the Mets game in between, and it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, and that's, like, a solid, I mean, going all the way to Bridgeport, if there's no traffic, like, that's still almost an hour if you're flying.
Yeah.
yeah, it's still, I've been in LA in years, but it's, like, mind-blowing to me that, like, public transport, I know it's, like, kind of on the way, maybe, they're kind of doing something.
Yeah, it's getting better, but, like, the geography 101 of LA is that, like, Dodger Stadium is near zero things, and that kind of becomes a problem when it comes to big events like this, where there are only, like, 2 or 3 entrances and exits. So at one point I was just, like, sitting in my car on my phone at the end of the game because A, nobody was going to stop me from doing it, and B, it's not like it mattered because I wasn't moving anywhere for, again, like upwards of 45 minutes I spent just in the parking lot.
Are they planning to do anything at Dodger Stadium for the Olympics?
I guess it depends on the sports that'll be there. So if baseball's back in and like softball or whatever, like if those things are part of it, then sure, yeah. LA's doing that wacky kind of like, hey, we're gonna have like four or five campuses that you'll maybe be able to. Like I think I'm just gonna board up the doors of my house and just stay here for that like 2.5-3 week stretch.
When New York was like kind of involved with, I forget what year it was, like we were just planning on renting. Like we're just like, we're gonna just go, I'm gonna go back to Connecticut, we'll just put our place on Airbnb and make probably a quarter of the year's rent.
Yeah,
that would have been nice.
Yeah, you know what, like that wouldn't be a bad idea here, if only because like a bunch of the events and everything, you got some stuff in Long Beach, some stuff in Carson. Those are near-ish to Redondo Beach. So, yeah, I mean, maybe. We're very far out from that, obviously. 2028 is not anywhere near now, so we'll see. Maybe I'll just stay with my in-laws in Orange County, if they're still there, in Orange County for a week and a half, 2 weeks.
I love that the Olympics, like, is the only thing that, like, makes college football scheduling seem... I mean, it's about the same. It's not even, like... makes it look better, it just makes it look like not the only thing that schedules out in ridiculous amounts of time.
Equally amounts of dumb.
Yeah, I mean, I get they have to, like, build stadiums usually, which is a whole other issue.
We don't, like, though. LA is being, that's the nice thing about LA. Being very smart about this.
It does seem like this one will make kind of sense, which, compared to most places.
Since we are the only city that wanted it, literally, we decided to make this kind of idea all surrounding efficiency, not really building anything that we are building, we're taking it right down. So we're erecting these sort of temporary stadiums and signage areas and villages that can be taken right down. It's still going to cost us money, but it might actually be profitable. So that's good. It kind of intersects with my other writing for those who might know one Sean Keeley, and I think that would be all of you. Could you imagine a day when somebody reads Nunes and has no idea who Sean is? I don't think that's ever going to happen. But I think the site will die before that.
No, I think it's referenced randomly enough in like posts and comments that you would hope that wouldn't happen anytime soon.
Yeah. But yeah. Anyway, for those who don't know, I do randomly write for Sean on neighborhoods.com. I write about LA real estate, and a lot of that intersects with the Olympic stuff, especially because a lot of the Olympic stuff also involves public transportation, as Dan alluded to. And yeah, we have somehow been in a 13-minute halftime. Sure, whatever.
And we didn't bring up Tulane once.
And now we did. I wrote an article about Tulane, cursing them with stuff. And right after that... Loss. They just couldn't help me out. However,
they hung in there. Like, they played pretty tough against
USF.
Were they against UCF or USF last?
USF. Year? They really did. They actually tested the Bulls quite a bit. They lost by 6.
I think they're. I could be wrong. I'm gonna look it up now while I'm talking.
3-4? And
maybe completely invalidate. I think they're 3-4, but I think they're doing pretty well against the spread, which is often I think you see with kind of weird teams like that.
And like Syracuse, who was 5-1-1 against the spread.
Yes, also like Syracuse, who I was very tempted on betting on last week with that huge line, and then I haven't bet on a game for or against Syracuse all year, and I'm like, I'm not going to start now.
Boom, did it again.
Yeah, so I can't bet on Syracuse. I can't bet against Syracuse. I'm not doing anything. I am leaving it alone.
Cannot fault you there. Yeah, Syracuse is 5-1-1 against the spread this year. They have not lost since the Middle Tennessee game. I would say that kind of mimics the faith that fans do or don't have on Syracuse, where, last five games, I would say we've been locked in on the, in the faith department, or at least since testing LSU, I think we've been pretty locked in.
Tulane is now 5-2 against spread.
Almost
after covering 10.5 against USF, losing 34-28. I'm super interested to see what the Syracuse spread is against Florida State. Obviously, some of that will be predicated on what does Florida State have this weekend.
Something dumb. Probably BC.
Yeah, they have BC tomorrow night. Oh, no. Tomorrow night?
Oh, God. Is that a Friday night game?
It might be.
Oh, no.
I think it might. It might be. Hold on.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, it's Wednesday. I thought it was Thursday for some reason.
It's a Friday night game.
Oh, yeah. We're talking. This podcast posts on Thursday. Yeah. So tomorrow night would be Friday.
Oh, God.
Stanford plays tonight. Against I'm who? Speaking on Wednesday, but you're listening on Thursday. Stanford plays tonight. I forgot how days worked.
That's fine.
Also, Tulane also plays on Friday night against Memphis. Memphis a 10.5-point favorite, which actually like seems like a spread that is taking into account how good Tulane is at covering, because Memphis should probably be a bigger favorite.
Memphis is going to win just that game. Sorry, Tulane.
Oh, Memphis is going to win. I'm just interested to see if Tulane covers again.
Stanford facing Oregon State. Oh, God. There will be blood.
Maybe without Bryce Love, though.
Really?
He might be out, yeah.
Why?
I'm writing about it as we speak. he tweaked his ankle against Oregon, and apparently is still not 100%, even though they had a bye.
Does he have, like, a pediatric final? He has to... It's like, sorry, guys, got a test.
Stanford players just half the team skips the Oregon State game to study, and they still win by 34.
No one needs. See, well, I mean, at least this is such bullshit. No one on the East Coast has watched anything Bryce Love's done since.
It's so annoying because, like, I love Saquon Barkley as a player. Bryce Love's numbers are so much more ridiculous.
Dude, this is just like the Derrick Henry shit, where McCaffrey should have been the Heisman winner, but nobody west of like Las Vegas, nobody east of Las Vegas voted for him for the Heisman.
It's wild. Just like, it's not that hard. And Barkley's amazing. And if Barkley wins the Heisman, which he's probably going to, like, I'm not going to have that huge problem with it. Barkley has 757 yards and 8 touchdowns. He's gone over 100 yards 3 times in 7 games. Like, and he had a 211 at Iowa, which is super impressive. It's the only reason they won. And I know he's rested a lot and they've
not a Heisman winner.
I get it. Let's talk to Bryce Love. He's averaging 10.3 yards a carry for the year. He has 3 more touchdowns than Saquon. He has almost double the yardage that Saquon has in just 18 more attempts. Like, it's jarring how good his numbers are. And while Saquon has Trace McSorley, a very good quarterback play, who has, you know, he's had a mixed year, but generally a very good quarterback who's a threat, Bryce Love does not have that. Bryce Love is the entire offense.
Yeah.
So, and I know that they lost 2 games early. I know that they're on the West Coast.
Who cares?
It's an individual award. We gave it to RG3 once. We gave it to goddamn Paul Hornung once. Obviously, all Syracuse fans know about that.
Ooh.
It's an individual award. Bryce Love's numbers are, if he had like 300 more yards than Saquon, I'd be like, okay, whatever. Saquon's team is really good. He has almost double the amount of yardage.
Right.
Like, it's insane.
Roll damn and, card.
He has 6.5 yards a carry to 10.3, 11 touchdowns versus 8. And, like, this doesn't take anything away from Barkley. Barkley's awesome, and he's going to be probably one of the top 5 picks, and I think he's going to be really good in the NFL. All of that is
my Giants totally will probably fine.
Yeah, maybe. They need a running game.
Need more than that, though.
They need a lot more than that. But come on, guys. Like, this isn't that hard. Just put the numbers against each other. And it's not like, you know, the Big Ten, especially with a down Michigan, is that much better than the Pac-12 slate. Like, it's pretty comparable in terms of the opponents they've played thus far. Michigan's defense is really good, but, like, you know, Barkley had 108 yards, and he averaged 7.2 and 2 touchdowns and some big plays. Like, that's a really good game. Love had 300 yards against Arizona State, which doesn't look like the worst team ever. He had 152 yards at Utah, which is a really tough place to play. Like, this is crazy. So...
You know that I will always stump for any player or anything really that happens west of Texas, because I know that ESPN has decided to actively stump against anything that happens west of Texas.
Chris Peterson nods.
Yeah. I think for the first time maybe ever, and again, don't have the data to back this up, but I think for the first time ever, we're probably not going to see game day come west of Texas, and it's only happened once where they've even been west of the Eastern time zone this year. ample opportunities in recent weeks. They went to James Madison a couple weeks ago, and they easily could have gone to either, you know, USC, fine, whatever. Or they could have even gone to San Diego State back when they were undefeated, decided not to do that. They instead of going to any of the very good games this week, they will instead involve Penn State for the second straight week. Whatever. I don't really care.
I can't really blame them for going to Penn State, Ohio State because of the ramifications of that game in terms of the national snail. But I haven't looked at like the full like going ahead to see where they might end up, but it would be kind of a shame if they don't get to highlight like something out west. And I know that Washington and USC losing early is tough, but
before
like,
they
there's
lost,
a lot of football to be played. Yeah, even so. Like there's a lot of football to be played, so we will see.
I guess so to put a period on the other things. Anyway, even if Bryce Love plays or played, depending on your perspective, Stanford is going up to Oregon State. That game will kick at 9 Eastern. So again, even if he did play, you weren't watching it anyway, unless.
Nope.
Unless it's me. You see, it would have been fun if Oregon State was good, if only because you could have had the, what could stop a tree against beavers? Type bullshit joke that would have that would have ensued. But no, since Oregon State is a tire fire, that wouldn't have mattered anyway. Still, roll damn card. I am a noted Stanford supporter for reasons unknown. Lovely campus, big fan of hanging out around Palo Alto and on their campus in general. When I lived up in
John's just trying to get that venture capital money.
There it is. All about that VC life. When I lived up in San Francisco, and I did not enjoy living up in San Francisco, one of the things that I used to do quite a bit, and I feel like I've talked about this all the time. One of the things I used to do was used to hang out on college campuses because I couldn't stand being in San Francisco. So I would spend quite a bit of time at Stanford and at Cal, just for the hell of it.
I love checking out college campuses when I'm in a new town. So
one of my
favorite
things.
I don't blame you for that at all. I mean, I walk through Columbia all the time because I'm like a mile away. So noted football power, Columbia.
New York's college team. One of the major things I do on any trip is stop into a college campus. It's one of my favorite things. I even worked in some Northwestern the one time I was in Chicago, just to make sure it happens. I have worked in places like Vandy. Where else? Anyway, quite a few places, but. How did we get here? Oh, wait. No, it's because we started talking about weekday football. Florida State is going at BC. I am not looking forward to this at all. Really hope Florida State beats BC, because if it does not happen, the Florida State will probably beat us instead.
That and also, like, I don't know that, like, BC is actually good, but the last 2 weeks have been so definitive that I'm, like, kind of scared about this whole BC thing.
The line's 3 points.
Yeah. Like, BC's offense is put up a lot of points 2 weeks in a row. And it's weird because, like, there's a difference between, like, a turnaround like Syracuse has kind of had over the last year and BC, like, 3 weeks ago versus what we think of as BC now, because the two games have been really jarring. So I kind of hope that's been a blip, because I don't want to play the BC team that beat Louisville by, what, like, 30?
Yeah,
I just don't want to play that team.
I don't play that team. I don't think Florida State wants to play that team. Like, what's Florida State's record right now? 2-4? If Florida State loses this game, there would be 2-5 and playing for their bowl lives against us, because they only have 11 games this year.
Yeah, that's a pretty scary notion as well. I didn't even think about the fact they lost a game, which kind of makes their crime. I mean, I don't know that, like, missing a bowl would be embarrassing. I don't know that it means all that much to them.
Yes, it
honestly
does. They have like a 38-year bowl streak.
Oh, you're right. Oh, that's terrible. Why did that happen?
God damn it.
That's brutal. I wish that wasn't the case.
See, here's the problem with this goddamn game. Okay. If Florida State wins, fine. They are 3-4. They would be 3-3 in the conference. It would be it would be they'd be 3-0 on the road, and they would be 0-3 at home.
That's just bizarre.
Just dumb. That would be one thing. If BC loses this game, they would be 4-5 overall. Is that right?
I should just pull up the ACC standings while we're doing this.
No, I did, and that's why I'm confused, because I didn't know that they were not really in much of a bye situation this year.
Yeah, when was their bye?
Never, apparently, since then.
Yeah, what the hell? What is the schedule?
It's the dumbest schedule.
I'm so confused.
This is
how
worse.
This happened?
This is worse. This is worse than a... Okay.
Oh, no, they have one. It's next week. It's after Florida State.
That's dumb. anyway. Okay. So BC's 4-4. If they lose, they're 4-5. If they win, they're 5-4.
Then they have NC State, who's going to beat them. And then they have UConn, who they should beat. And then they have us.
Okay. No, I think we're just going to do this for eternity. Where us and BC are going to face each other with a ball on the line. Maybe for both of us. Oh boy. Did not see this coming.
Definitely not ideal.
No, not ideal at all.
I liked this a lot more when, you know, BC was just trash, and we could not, you know, we could kind of pencil that one in. Even though penciling in any game for Syracuse is, like, still kind of stupid, but, like, at least that one felt like, oh, you know, as long as we handle our business, it should be fine. And now, coming off of the last two games, which for those who are not intimately aware of Boston College's recent football undertakings, they didn't beat Louisville by 40. They hung 40 on them. They beat Virginia by 30, which is what I was mixing the two games up. They beat Louisville 45-42 in a weird thriller on the road, and
which
then they
is
went
the same
Virginia.
As 30 points.
Yes, and then they went to Virginia, who was 5-1 entering the game and looked really good, and beat them 41-10 in Charlottesville. So those are what the two things that have happened back to back, which is why BC is all of a sudden kind of like scary, and even if that seems to still be the, you know, by far the best shot for win number 5. Obviously, that's the last game, but that's our most likely win going forward still. So if that's not a blip, then things get very interesting all around, because and we'll learn a lot with this Florida State BC game tomorrow night, because this is Thursday when you're listening to this.
Yeah, and by learn a lot, we mean only maybe, as in only. Only potentially, and you might not even learn anything about the team you think you're going to. God, I hate this team. I always hate BC. I hate them even more now. 2 weeks ago, I think, maybe not even 2 weeks ago, S&P thought that BC was trash. They still kind of think that, but not in the same way. I think... Even a couple weeks ago, BC was like, I don't know, like 110th in the S&P. And that's fine. And we had like an 84% chance to beat them. That chance is down to like 68. And don't love it.
No. Now, I will say their running game is what is powering them. And I'm not saying that Syracuse is like, you know, some all-time great run-stopping team, but if I had to choose, well, we can stop the run. We've done it very well this year.
Two straight weeks against very good running teams.
Yes, I don't love... Anthony Brown has been pretty good in spots, but I would much rather take my chances with him trying to sling the ball on us against an improved passing defense than, you know, having their running game, which has been amazing the last 2 weeks. So if we had to choose, like, what they have in terms of, you know, weapons, I still think stylistically BC is a team that, you know, the matchup favors us. But, you know, I think Virginia and Louisville probably thought similar things, and they got the ball run down their throats. So, again, we don't have to worry about this until, like, a month from now. So hopefully things have shaken out positively, and that game doesn't mean as much as it probably end up will meaning, because why wouldn't it?
Okay. Since we're not picking this game, actually, okay. We're not picking a Syracuse game. Let's talk about this game a little bit more. Just in the sense of who's going to win. Okay, not who's going to win. Dan, who do we want to win this game?
Give me Florida State. I don't want Florida State, like you said. I don't want them desperate against us. I want, like, the axis of the world to, like, feel like it's back on its normal tilt, rather than Florida State being 2-5 entering a game with us, and BC and literally needing to win out to make a bowl, and BC being 5-4 and very potentially needing our game for a bowl. So I think if we just, you know, that still might end up being the case, but give me a Florida State win. Let's, like, return the universe to its rightful place for a bit here.
Okay. I'm fine with that. I think Florida State's going to win the game. I'm not as sold on it as I was as recently as, like, an hour ago, but whatever. The problem with BC winning this game, if BC wins this game, they are probably going to be 6-5 going into our game. Maybe. Probably.
So if they win this game, they'll be 5-4, adding UConn, they'd probably be 6-5, yeah.
And then if they lose,
they'll probably be 5-6.
Now the problem with that, of course. If we both go into that goddamn last game at 5-6, what's worse, I guess?
Having BC already clinched a bowl, or having BC need a bowl? I would say having them need a bowl. Obviously, I still think they would play hard to try to get to win number 7, because, like, these things don't just, like, cap off. Like, you do want to get to the best bowl possible. Right. But I think you would have a much hungrier BC team, especially if, like, I think if they get to 5, if they're 5-6, I think Adazio's job is probably fairly secure given the youth of that team and some of the big wins they picked up. But you don't want, like, have them lose to Florida State, lose to NC State, beat UConn, but then, like, look like things have returned to normal, and have Adazio still have question marks about his job, and then need a win at Syracuse to basically play for Adazio's job potentially. That would be a bad spot for us, I think.
Yeah.
You don't want motivated players like that. Like, we saw that with Schaefer's last game. Obviously, he had already lost his job, but we saw, you know, our guys go out there and play for him. Like, you just don't want that kind of motivation on a college football team going against you if you can help it.
100%. But yeah, this will, either way, sets up something fun-ish against BC in that last game. But yeah, would much rather face a mildly motivated BC team than a very sort of motivated Florida State team. Sort of. Again.
I will say, this is, we've had some weird podcasts in terms of topics. This is like an all-timer. We really bounced around some strange places with what we did here tonight.
Here's the hilariously dumb part. And again, inside baseball for everybody else. You could have had a mostly serious podcast twice. Instead, you had a mostly not Syracuse podcast once, and lo and behold, that's the one you're going to get.
I really think this was, like, the Groundhog Day of podcasts, and we just, like, really saw, we really explored the limits of what this podcast could be tonight on a bye week.
Absolutely. I think we might have somehow, I think we talked about Syracuse more in the offseason, and I think every single offseason episode than we did in this one.
I think it's that in our first two attempts to record, we got far enough into talking about Syracuse. Like, it wasn't like it just dropped, like, 4 minutes in.
Just didn't want to talk about it anymore.
10 minutes in, and we're like, you know what? We talked about Syracuse. The listeners didn't hear it, but we did. And we're doing this for ourselves. Like, this is a project for us, and everyone else who wants to tune in, that's fine. But yeah, we talked about Syracuse elsewhere, and those recordings are lost to the ether, I'm guessing. Yeah. So this is the podcast you get. It was dumb. I don't know if anyone will care about anything we talked about, but, you know, I think if you've listened to this for, you know, a couple of years now, you know that this is going to happen sometimes.
Yeah. And that's, again, you get what you get. Fine. Here we go. Again, fine. If you want to close on a Syracuse note, for some reason, the Atlantic Division is pretty much like the best road division in all of college football. Somehow.
I did not know that.
Yeah, pretty much is true. We are, not only is Syracuse the only team in the ACC Atlantic not to win a road game, we're the only ACC Atlantic team not to win two road games.
That's like super strange.
super dumb. Yeah.
Look, not that our opportunities have been that great. Like, no. We played Miami and NC State, so.
No, but just in general. Just not even, yeah, just not even ACC only. This is overall any road game.
Oh, and LSU. So it wasn't like our opportunities have been
scarce.
Yeah, not great. Obviously, we could have won all three of those games, but it's not like we had some. It's not like MTSU was on the road.
Right. But yeah, look. Okay, just indulge me for a second. And again, here's your Syracuse content. Enjoy. NC State 2-0 on the road. Clemson 2-1 on the road. Boston College 3-1 on the road. Oh, God damn it. Louisville 2-1 on the road. Florida State 2-0 on the road. And Wake Forest 2-2 on the road. And then Syracuse 0-3.
That's very strange.
Just the dumbest goddamn standings you'll ever see. And also, fun fact, again, before we leave, Syracuse and Georgia Tech are the only teams in the ACC to not have won a game on the road yet.
Georgia Tech hasn't had that many.
Only one.
I don't think either. Yeah, so some of this is just like scheduling falling weird, but it's actually weirder to me that many have won two games and that many have, like, the Coastal's also like super coastally this year behind Miami, so.
Some might argue the most coastal.
Yeah, I mean, that happens. So it just, the ACC is like a whole hot mess this year. College football is a whole hot mess this year.
It is. Again, aside from Alabama.
Alabama, not a mess. Alabama just doing what Alabama does.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. I think that'll close us out, Dan. Somehow we made it to an hour, even though we never thought we would.
It's amazing that we did. And I don't even know where this hour went. I'm not sure what we talked about. I know I mentioned Tulane as a joke once. Then we actually talked about them for a bit. I know we talked about BC like for more than half this podcast, which is weird because we don't play them yet. Yeah, I mean, what do you? This is just. It was very bye week. We gave the most bye week podcast we could do, and I'm gonna say that's what we intended on, and I don't know that that's true, but it's what we did.
Fair enough. Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Troy Noons is an absolute podcast. Roll damn Noles.
Go orange. Yes.